Okay. All right. We'll try to go with the, this microphone setup and hopefully we get something from it. Hey, everyone. This episode is with Rianna Marcus. She's a Dutch World Tour rider on Visma Lisa bike. She's on the big yellow and black team that wins everything. But in the last few years, she hasn't worn that kit because she's been wearing the Dutch national champion kit for the time trial and the road race. She's up in Tenerife at a training camp right now, so thankfully the Wi-Fi on the volcano was good enough. One of the questions I've loved asking a few guests over the last few episodes is, since the Olympics are coming up this year, pretend you've already been selected for the Olympics and have total freedom to do whatever you want in the build-up to those games. What would the training plan and prep be for these last few months in the build-up towards the Olympics? Well, Rianna, she's has a really good shot at doing very well at the Olympics, and that's one of her big goals for the season. So she's probably the best person I could think of to ask that question to and hear how she's preparing for the Olympics this year. She hasn't yet been selected for the Olympics, but that is her big goal, to be selected and hopefully do well at the Olympic Games. So this is a super fun podcast to hear about how she's doing it. She's incredibly well-spoken, humble, speaks about how fortunate she's been to have some incredible mentors throughout her career, and there's tons of great stuff to learn in this episode. I hope you love it. If you love this content and want more, I wrote a book called How to Become a Pro Cyclist, which you can only get at howtobecomeaprocyclist.com. Rianna listened to the audiobook version and left me one of the nicest reviews about it, which was so cool to read. I tried to give everything younger me would want to know about how to make it as a pro cyclist and compile everything into a single guide. So I hope you love it, and I hope you love this episode where you can learn tons more from Rianna. So how long have you been? You're in Tenerife right now.
Yes. I'm on the Taira on altitude in Tenerife.
Okay. And then how long have you been there for?
Now I'm here for 1.5 week and still 1.5 week to go.
Okay. And then how many times have you been to Tenerife? Just like from your social media accounts, it seems like you've been to every altitude and training camp spot ever. I'm curious to hear the review. Which one's your favorite?
Tenerife is actually normally my favorite, but now with weather, it's like quite difficult to plan the routes and stuff sometimes. So it's a bit difficult this year, I would say. But this is the third year that I'm here, and been to quite a lot of places now, and I really like Tenerife.
Okay. Are you there by yourself or with the team?
With the team, okay. Yeah. This year, yeah.
Okay. Give me the inside of the jumbo altitude camp protocol. What do you guys do at altitude? What's all the secret
Visma,
weapon stuff?
Visma Lease.
Visma Lease, yeah. Right. Everybody does this. That's so
funny. Yeah, everybody. Literally. Like...
Jumbo's loving it. They get free marketing for years when they're not even paying.
Yeah, exactly. What was your question? What we are doing here?
Yeah. Like, what do you guys do for that? What is like the standard altitude camp protocol for you guys, girls?
To be honest, it's actually changing a little bit for each person. But I'm here for 3 weeks now together with two teammates, Anna Henderson and Eva van Acht. Before Clem van Empel was here with Marianne Vos, and they are targeting to be well in Ronde van Vlaanderen, so Flanders and Paris-Roubaix, and we are more training for Amstel Gold and Liège. So it changes a little bit from person to person, but basically it's like loads of hours and a shitload of effort. So the first block is always easy, which is really nice, so we can have a little bit of adaptation here on top, and then the real training starts. So today's a rest day. I'm quite tired. I'm very happy with the rest day, and then we get ready for the next block again.
Okay. And then how long is like the adaptation phase normally, like when you first get to altitude?
Yeah, we do one block of training really easy here. So in our case, we came from a race. So we trained for 2 days and then we had one rest day. And that was the first adaptation block.
Okay. And is it just riding easier just for... So 2 days of training, easy, and then the real training starts. And is it just riding easier for the first 2 days?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Do you track anything?
Like... And also we came from a race.
Yeah.
So then... Sorry, we came from a race, a stage race, so we were quite tired as well. So then it's just, really nice actually to have three couple of easy days to get really ready to train again, because we really needed it.
Yeah, sure. Well, you've had a great start to the season so far. Like at Normandy, it's been a really nice start for you.
Yeah. I was really happy actually with Strada because I raced really well there, and I also I really like the race because it's so tough, and I did well. And the day after, we were going to fly home, and I felt immediately like when I woke up, like shit, I'm going to be really sick. And then I was sick for 7 days, so it was just a cold bit actually, but it took me 7 days, so it was quite difficult, you know. And I tried to stay patient and stuff, but the week after, from Thursday to Sunday, we had Normandy, and I was targeting that race because there was a time trial to start with, and then it was a really nice stage race on a little lower level, you know, so I hope to do well. But after 7 days of sickness, it was not really easy to get back into the rhythm of the stage race. And the TT was also a little bit disappointing for me because after 7 days on bed, I trained for 2 days and then I had one rest day and I started racing. So it was quite a hard comeback to start within, 8K prologue or something. So there was a warm welcome again. Like the blood taste was for sure in my throat, but I'm happy actually that I got better every day. And so far the season has been well, and now I hope to have a really good training period here so that I can prove myself in the races who are coming up.
Yeah, awesome. Did you change anything like from last year, just reviewing last season and then make any changes over the winter to try anything new for this year?
Yeah, quite a lot changed, to be honest. So, or almost our whole stuff in the woman part of FISMA changed. So I started to work together with a new trainer, but we also have two new race coaches. So our race tactics really changed. But also, I started to work with a new trainer, which is like a complete different person than the person I worked before. And that's definitely a big change, but I really like it so far. And my trainer was here as well for the first more than a week, so it's really nice to have him here so we can work a bit closer, analyze some data, you know. And then it's really nice to work together, but definitely a lot changed. Only like personality is already like so different. So yeah, there's a complete different atmosphere now, but I really like it. It's good for me to have a change, and especially after 3 years working together with the same person, sometimes it can be good to get again out of the comfort zone and to get a complete new vibe and a new idea of training and stuff. So
yeah, sure. Is there anything specific that they pointed out as far as new things to focus on?
Planning wise, we almost do the same. So I started with the same races, and also the altitude camps are planned almost the same like last year, so they're not really a lot changed. My goals are quite similar as well, so also with like training, like planning wise, that stays the same as well. But then there are just some difference, like just a little difference in like training method. So I would say my previous coach is like really well also mentally, like as a, like more like mental coach kind of way, but now my new coach is more like a data analyst. So it's just like some small changes we made, like what kind of power I need to do effort or like etc. And the idea is still like the training ID like this mice is using, so it's not that the effort like completely changed, but just a bit in the power numbers and the way like how we combine efforts maybe.
Okay, what are like the three sessions that you do the most then?
What I do definitely the most is endurance riding, so that's like the main part, of course, I think like everyone else. Then now I have some sprints with it as well.
Within the same ride or like a different workout?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. Then, everything like under threshold basically, to have like a little base. So that's like we have some blocks there to have like yeah, base like strong base level. And then of course like VO2 max is super important. So.
Okay. So the endurance rides you're doing, are you just riding around it like zone two all day, or what is there any efforts in it? Is there any, do you do anything with your diet? Is there anything specific, or it's just like a nice day out in the sun?
Both. Like it's a combination. It depends. Yesterday we had like quite an easy ride where we could just enjoy, like they said, we said like a touring day, you know? So we did a day before we did efforts, and then we had just an easy ride. And then we had to end with some sprints. But it's definitely a combination. Like sometimes you need to do some efforts, like 3 times 10 minutes in zone two, or, you know, like, yeah, just to keep your, yeah, just to change, we always need to change the rhythm a little bit to keep your body working as well. And also to make the ride not so boring. Like, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. And then like, what are some of like the really common interval sets you do? For VO2 max or whatever, or like even time trial training?
Well, time trial training, we don't do it so often, but of course, always when we go towards the time trials, like we start doing the efforts. But like the basic is just to keep riding the TT bike the whole year. And then it can be just zone two efforts. But towards the goals, of course, we also do the threshold efforts in the position. So TT efforts are normally like for 6 minutes, those kind of efforts, so a bit longer.
Interesting. Okay. Do you do anything with like cadence changes, like low cadence or high cadence work?
No, not really.
Interesting. And so what are the other things that you think are more important that like make a bigger difference?
For sure, the high carb strategy on the bike is something we are like using a lot. I think it's very common now for all the big teams. They use it a lot, and then I think it's for each rider like good to find the balance if you can handle 90 grams or even go higher in the race. So that's like one of the main things we are training on the bike first.
Okay. Do you ever go low carb? Is that still a thing? Like, do people ever do that still?
Yeah, some people do that. I don't do it so often. On easy days, we of course go lower. So, but I don't really do like 5 hours on 30 grams an hour or something. So, no, not really. Like we try to balance it. So we try to, yeah, change from training to training so that something is happening in the body, you know, not just every day the same. But yeah, I don't go so extreme actually.
Okay. Interesting.
I know you did. So I listened to your podcast, your book, and then I was very impressed with your stories.
Yeah, there's a lot of ridiculous things in there. It's like when you're writing it and you're just remembering these stories, or like you watch some of like the video journals from like 3 years ago and you're like, Jesus, dude, like what? Like what was the goal? Like, were you like, what were you thinking then? I'm curious, which stories did
me,
you like?
For me, if I think back about 10 years ago, like, how I raced then, like I cannot imagine now anymore. It's such a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious, which stories in my book stood out to you? Because you wrote me such a nice review, and I really appreciate that. That was really nice.
Yeah. What I liked the most actually is to hear like really from someone outside the Europe, like the full story. Like how it is to try to become a pro in Europe, you know, because I'm always like super impressed with the people who just move here, who leave all their family to just come to Europe and try to make it into racing, which is like, it's already super hard. And then like, if you leave all your family and friends behind to try and make it, like it's extreme. And then you're also, in my opinion, quite an extreme person. So then you're also trying all the edges of like training, food, whatever, like everything, basically. Yeah, that's mentally like super hard. I found it really funny when you said the thing about the cold showers.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, the cold showers, like, so funny. I still do the cold showers. Like in the last, I started that in 2019, and that started, like, I'd already been, like, playing around with, like, cold therapy stuff just because I thought it was interesting before that. So, like, I'd done ridiculous stuff for a couple years before, but the cold showers, it started because when I first came to Europe, like, I was so depressed and lonely my first year in Europe, and you're just like, all I have to do today is go training, and then you're not going to talk to anybody, you have nothing to do, you're just going to sit in this lonely apartment by yourself, and I, like, you just have a hard time getting out of bed. And so for me, the cold showers was like, okay, this is going to get me out of bed right away. And then I started writing in a journal as far as, like, everything I achieved that day. And if you screwed up everything else that day, it'd be like, well, at least I pushed myself to do a cold shower. Like, sounds really stupid, but it worked for me. Like, it helped me for that. And then I just stuck with it. And ever since then, like, the only times I've missed it in years, and I'm, like, actually really proud of this. Like, I've kept the streak going for, like, 5 years now. The only times I've missed it is when I broke my pelvis and when I broke my back. And so, like, both times I couldn't walk. So I was, like, laying in a hospital bed. But, I like it. It works for me.
Yeah. I found it really funny that you said, like, okay, then I did at least one thing, like, really well that day, you know?
Yeah, because I was getting screamed at for breaking rules I didn't know existed. The German system, really, they love rules. And I think when they must go to Canada, they just must think we're, like, zoo animals that just, like, run free.
Yeah.
That's funny. But, yeah, so what your path into cycling is pretty cool. I mean, it's probably not untypical for a Dutchie, but, like, coming from speed skating, how did you make that transition?
Yeah, when I was younger, I started with speed skating before I started cycling. So, yeah, it's quite a Dutch thing, you know, speed skating. And my dad said, like, you don't need to keep going, but you need to learn how to do it. So when there's, like, nature ice, you can at least go out and skate. So we got to learn. Like, I have two sisters, and we all, three of us got to learn speed skating. But in the end, we all liked it to race. And yeah, it was also just a bunch of friends training together. Like, it was super nice, actually. So yeah, I found it really fun. And I did the long distance skating, but also the marathon skating. And, at one point, like, I had to start, like, summer training, and then, cycling got involved, and I also started to do some racing there. And yeah, step by step, I actually liked cycling more than speed skating. And yeah, that's, like, how I, at one point when I was 18, decided to stop speed skating and go full into cycling, where actually I first also finished my study to become a sports teacher, which was also quite a difficult combination together with cycling, because yeah, I just had to make loads of hours doing sports, actually, which was super nice, but also, like, difficult, because some days we were from 8 to 5 out there doing sports, and then I came home and I had to do cycling, you know, and had to go out for training, which was, yeah, super hard. So the first years I was not so professional, I would say, and then once I finished school, I went full into cycling, and yeah, I actually got better every year, and yeah, I just really like the challenge to become better, actually. So that's how I kept motivated to keep going.
Okay. Did Marianne Vos help you make that transition? Was she involved in that somehow?
No. Later, so I did my 8th year together with her in the team, but already 4 years before that, I made the decision to stop with speed skating.
Okay. Gotcha. How do you find it, like, the similarities and the differences between training as a speed skater compared to a cyclist?
Speed skating is definitely more, like, there's definitely more variation involved, because you do so many sports, because you're actually running, you do power training, you do, like, we call it jumping exercises, you know, like, skate specific exercises, actually, just like, out on the track. And then you do roller skating in the summer, you ride a bike. So there's, like, so many options to train, where cycling, like, of course we do some strength and core, but, like, most of the time we're on the bike and that's it. So there's definitely more variation, and always you are training together with your team. So you don't train as an individual, where as a cyclist, yeah, you know as well, like, it's most of the time individual, actually. and you will just find your teammates at the race.
Yeah, interesting. And just I didn't think of this question until now, but a chapter I wrote in my book was talking about like how I tried like Nils van der Poel's training for it and tried to apply that to cycling. What did you think of that? Because you're the only speed skater I've ever spoken to. And he did all his training on the bike, basically.
Yeah, true. Well, I found him super impressive as well, because I think he was quite extreme as well. It was funny to hear that you tried his training methods. I would say, I don't know actually if it's like a super good method or something. I never dived really deep into it myself. But I definitely like the variations speed skaters do, and I think it's not so bad to do as a cyclist a little bit more often, like also a little bit of variation, you know, because just spending hours on the bike, like, it's also not so good for your body, I think. I think it's good to be trained a little bit multi-discipline, so yeah.
I completely agree, and I think like one of my biggest weaknesses as a cyclist is I like so many other sports. And like for me, it's like, okay, it's fun, and you can talk about like the physiology for it as far as like different muscles and like helping with bone density and blah blah blah, all this kind of stuff. For me, the biggest part is like it's like free training. Like if I go do my bike work, like I do my training on the bike, and then I go do 2 hours of cross country skiing, like that's another 2 hours of training that like it feels like a reward. That feels like a vacation. That's not like an extra 2 hours of training I got to suffer through in the winter. It's like that's fun, and then it's like I enjoy getting in the extra training that way.
Yeah, and I think mentally it makes a big difference, because this year we had Nature Ice in the Netherlands, and I had 2 hours just easy on the schedule, and I texted my trainer like, okay, can I change the 2 hours of riding for like 2 hours of skating? And then he said, okay, that's fine for me. And then I went out for skating, you know, and the day after I was like motivated to go back on the bike again. And yeah, because you also can have some fun, you know, like, just don't be on the bike for one day. And here I do it as well, because sometimes I skip like the bike completely on the rest day, and I ask my trainer like, yeah, can I, instead of doing a small recovery, right, just go for like a nice hour walk or something, just to be one day not on the bike, switch off like the mind completely, and then the day after you feel so much more motivated to go back on the bike again and do the training well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing, it's like when you're walking, or like maybe this is just me and this is just how like my brain works, but if I go do another sport, like if I go for a walk or something like that, it's easy. I come up with new ideas and stuff like that. Like it's easier to think and reflect on stuff versus when you go on the bike. I don't know if it's just like subconsciously, even if I were to leave my like computer at home or put it in my pocket, I would still be thinking about how do I feel on the bike? Like how do my legs feel? Like that's what I would be thinking about. I'd be imagining the cycling computer there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You come up with great new ideas when you go walking.
Yeah, you just know your body so well, so you exactly know like how you should feel, mm-hmm. and like if it's a bad day, then you feel like, okay, I should like push more watts or whatever, and you always like, yeah, are more like into the real training schedule, where like here, if I do a walk and I'm out of breath because I'm altitude, I just stop for a second and I just have some rest, where on the bike you would never stop for a second to take some rest because you're out of breath, because like, yeah, why shoot you? So it's mm-hmm. definitely way different.
Yeah, I agree. And I was having this conversation with Quinn Simmons on the podcast I recorded with him, and we were talking about like we think like minute for minute the hardest sport, like cycling's up there, but minute for minute the hardest sport in the world is ski mountaineering, and that's like the one that I've been playing around with and stuff. And I mean, it's using your whole body, and you're at like 3,000 meters when you're doing it, and you're just like running up a mountain. And I was like, man, I think this is a new way for like to train. Like if you want to like try to pop your lungs and your heart, that you try doing VO2 max efforts with that, it's a different planet of pain you can be in.
Yeah, we did it once with a team, not the skiing you're talking about now, but the
cross country skiing.
Yeah, the cross country skiing. We did it as a team camp in December. It was so much fun, but it was also so hard and so difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like three phases of cross-country skiing. There's like the first phase where like you can't even move and you're like a deer on ice, just like flapping all over the place, and like you fall over and you don't even know how to get up. Then there's like the second phase where it's like you can kind of do it, but the only way for you to move is like an all-out sprint because you're so inefficient. It's just like you can either sprint or stop. And like this is the part where people either decide they love the sport or they hate it. And then there's like the third phase where you get a bit more efficient with it and you can glide along. And it can be like, okay, I can do this now. This is like kind of like cycling.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked it to do it actually. And it was super hard and like a really good training camp. But it also, it's a little bit similar to speed skating because you use a little bit more the outsides of your legs as well, the muscles. So I could also feel that I was for a really long time not on my skates anymore because, yeah, with the skiing, I felt the same. Yeah, you need to push also a little bit more sidewards where on the bike you, yeah, just like push downwards actually. So like we definitely had a lot of muscle pain there.
Okay, interesting. When you go speed skating in the Netherlands, are there ovals everywhere where you can go? Or when you were saying before when you went and did it, were you skating outside? Like how common is it for people to skate outside versus indoors?
Skating outside is like in the Netherlands, if it's happening, like it's madness because like it's not happening often anymore. So normally it's on just rings, on ice skating rings. But we have quite a lot in the Netherlands because it's so famous to do skating. So I think there are like for sure like 20 rings or something in the Netherlands where you go out. And then like our country is not so big, so that's quite a lot. So.
Yeah, cool. That's awesome. Because that's completely different. I don't know if there's many other countries where speed skating is a thing. We have a lot of hockey rinks, but not speed skating rinks.
I think there are some countries where it's like, quite normal to go for skating, but for sure to really race, like the Netherlands is by far like the most common country to do it.
Sure. Okay. So with all these altitude camps that you do, like you're always up on top of whatever, a volcano or a mountain somewhere by yourself. It's like training, eating, sleeping. It's very boring. And like you're also like you're so tired that like you're mentally cracked. Like at least for me, I would feel like I was really stupid because I was like I can't think. I'm just like my brain's not working right now. Yeah. Do you have any things that you guys do to like kill the boredom at all? Like card games or anything like that that you do?
Yeah, I'm very happy to have some teammates here now because we have indeed some games here. And then I also really like to read books, so I always bring like a bunch of books here. But it's definitely like it's always like super hard to be on altitude because to be honest, like you're eating, drinking, training and sleeping, that's it. So it's quite intense, but it's nice actually. And also now I'm here with teammates, so we have like a similar goal, so it's nice to spend time together. But it definitely makes a big change if you're with people surrounded that you really like, or when you're just like with a bunch of people where you struggle a little bit to have like the same rhythm or like the same interest or something, because that makes it a bit harder.
Yeah, I think of like the one training camp that we had in, I don't know if you've ever done a training, have you ever done a training camp in Kutai? You would know the story from like the book, but like when a group of us rented the Wiesberger hut there. And it's like this like 200-year-old stone hut up in the mountains there. And it was like five or six of us friends. Like it was being like at summer camp. It was so much fun. We'd sit at the dinner table every night and just talk for hours. I mean, I broke my pelvis in the middle of that camp. That was kind of a downer. But aside from that, it was a really fun training camp.
You know, I really like Tenerife now, but... like one of the best camps as well is for sure the one before the Tour de France. Then we are in Tignes in France, and you have like a small city and like the big lake in the on top of the mountain. So there you have like way more things to do outside of training, and it's really nice to be in the evening at the lake. Like some of the guys were fishing, you know, like it feels also a little bit like it's holiday, you know, where you can like sit together in the evening for a little bit.
That's awesome. And you can actually probably confirm this for me. I heard this rumor from some other World Tour riders. I don't know if it's true. They were saying that when for the jumbo team camp before the Tour de France, you guys are allowed to bring your families up to the camp. Like, do you guys all stay in like cabins and then the families can stay with you as well?
Yeah, so last year in Tignes, the camp before the tour, I also did bring my husband, and he's a rider as well, but he's like actually he's a gravel pro, so he was training with us every single day, and we like two of us just had an apartment, and then next door the girls were in a different apartment, and then we had dinner and lunch and stuff together, and we were training together, but yeah, we had our own apartment next door.
That's awesome. That is a great investment where the extra budget goes. That's sweet. You guys should advertise, you girls, the team should advertise that more. Being like not the
Yeah.
like from the Team Sky days when they'd be like, oh, the Death Star is showing up, like the robots and whatnot. I was like, no, that's a great way to spend the money. Like bring your like give all the riders a
Yeah.
family vacation.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference because, yeah, I'm away now. This period, I'm away for 4 weeks because I did a tour of Normandy and then we straight went here. So it's 4 weeks away from home. And then I come back for 4 days and then I'm leaving for a block of racing, which includes Amstel, Flèche Wallonne, and Liège. And then I will be home for 4 days again before I leave to the Vuelta. And then we do the Vuelta. And then I will be 1 week home before I go to altitude again. So, yeah, sometimes it looks like it's like a super nice life, but in the end, if you count the days that you're together with your family at home, or in my case with my husband, like it's not so much. And then if he can join like one of those 3 camps, like it makes you just like a happier person. And in the end, that's like also will make you ride faster.
Absolutely. I completely agree. That's wonderful that you guys can do that on your team. Where are you based in Europe? Where is like I know you're from the Netherlands, but do you live there or are you based somewhere else?
I'm 10K away from Amsterdam, from the city.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it great? Is it good for training?
It's not too bad to be honest.
You're
Yeah,
always at
I'm
training camp.
quite close. Yeah, I'm always in training camp, so that makes for sure a difference. Now, like most of the winter, I spent in Spain, of course. Yeah, it's definitely not the best area to become the best cyclist. It's not too bad in the winter and stuff for training, but I'm so much away on training camps anyway that I decided to, yeah, make home like really home. So I stayed close to my family. So when I'm home, I will see all of them. And then, like, most of the time, I will be away in like Spain or somewhere else to go for training.
Okay, interesting. Okay, and last question on like the training camp stuff. Do you guys do any like gym training or heat training or any of these other things, or is it just riding the bike?
No, we definitely do strength and core. I would say it's a bit a combination because I'm for sure not doing squats with like 100 kilos or something because, yeah, we don't believe that that makes you a better rider. But yeah, like I said before, I think it's really important to train your body as well to be a bit multidisciplined, like train, so that you don't just get an injury like if like something small happens. So yeah, it's a big core is a big thing, but also a little bit of strength, and then it's most of the time the movements you make actually that yeah, so not huge weights but different movements to train your body.
Interesting. Okay, so are the gym sessions not that intense then? Like it's more like activation and mobility stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. And then how often do you do that?
It depends. Like here, I do it quite often. So once per block, or like at least once or twice a week.
Okay.
But in a period of racing, of course, it's a little bit less because, yeah. Then, and like for me, I do most of the time stage races, so then it's like really difficult to do those trainings. But at least we do strength like twice a week in a training block like this.
Okay, interesting. And do you ever play around with heat training? That seems to be like the thing a lot of people do now.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely did that. For me, it's really difficult sometimes in, especially in those periods actually, where you just travel around from race to race, and the temperatures can make a huge change there. So for me, I really like it to prepare if I go to a stage race where it will be like hot, to prepare with heat sessions so that like not your body is in shock when you arrive at the race and it's like suddenly the 30 degrees or above, you know. So if we go towards races where we can expect that it will be like more warm, we will definitely get prepared for that.
Okay. All right. Is that like riding on a trainer with a lot of clothes on, or is that going in a sauna, or how do you do it?
No, we ride on a trainer. Yeah.
Okay. And how long is that session?
It's always less than an hour, actually. So it's not so long, but it's just like, yeah, making sure that you will start sweating. And yeah, that doesn't have to be like you don't have to go like super extreme.
Interesting.
But yeah, something needs to happen in the body, you know? So it's like quite short, but intense.
Okay. Well, okay, here, switching topics, talking about something that is very extreme. These time trial helmets your team came out with.
Yeah.
Wait, have they been banned? Did the UCI ban these?
Not yet. But yeah, let's see what's going to happen there. But we started to develop this helmet actually last year. I was already in some tests for the team there. And when I walked into the wind tunnel this winter, and Eduardo Affini was in the wind tunnel with the helmet on, I was looking at him and I said, like, hey, you look ridiculous. Like, I hope it's like crazy fast because it doesn't look good.
You look like Alien out of Predator.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but it's actually if you're riding in position, I think it's not so bad. I think it doesn't look so bad. And also, like, as a rider, like, you see so much. Like, it's actually quite safe to ride with it. For sure, the best helmet I was wearing so far. But, it's huge.
I bet it's really safe. There's a lot of helmet there. It's like, I think you could do Formula One with this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I bet it's fast. It's huge.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. How did you all manage to keep that quiet then? Like, have you been working on this for so long? Like, I don't think it got leaked at all.
No.
It's like impressive.
I think it's taking the whole team to do that.
Yeah, very
because,
cool.
Because, you need to count, especially in our organization, on a lot of people. But also not so, I think they don't ask the whole organization to join this project, you know. So it's just a couple of people, but they are working on it for quite a long time. And it was definitely like a worldwide news when it came out.
Oh, that's what's so funny is like maybe a month before, EF was getting so much, like everybody was making fun of them for wearing their like TT helmets in the road races and skin suits in the road races. And everyone's giving them such a hard time. A month later, Jumbo's like, oh, you thought that was bad. Wait to see what we got. Let's put the rocket ship
on
their heads.
I also found it really shit that like they posted all the pictures with the guys when they were standing. But the helmet looks so horrible when you're standing.
Oh, it looks way better when you're on the bike.
If you're in position, it's not so crazy, right? But
true.
Yeah, it's just looking ridiculous. But I still think actually to have a helmet which looks ridiculous on the TT makes more sense than a TT helmet in the race. But
I completely agree. And just to like reemphasize the point where you said like it's safer. I agree with that because what you see everybody, like myself included, what everybody does with their time trial helmets is nobody wears a time trial helmet properly. Everybody rolls it all the way back. So it's like it's grabbing on the top of your forehead so you can see through the top of it and to make it go level with your back. This is the first helmet that's just designed to actually go that way. So it's probably safer because if you crash wearing a time trial helmet the way that everybody actually wears the helmet, and you can't really tell if the helmet has a visor because you don't really know where the helmet stops and the visor starts. Nobody's wearing a helmet properly. Just the UCI just like kind of looks the other way that everybody has their helmet on like the back of their head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. What are the biggest goals for this season?
My biggest aim at the moment is to make it to the Olympic selection because for me it would be a dream to start there. And then, I'm also really hoping for a spot on the TT there, which is quite a hard goal, to be honest, because we have four spots in the road race, but then like of those four spots, two people go to the TT. So you need it, if you want to do the TT, you also need to make it to the road selection. And yeah, that's quite difficult in the Netherlands, but yeah, that's definitely my main goal for this year. And that includes like having sub goals in all the other TTs. And yeah, there are some stage races where I want to do well, and also some classic races, which I pointed out, but for sure the Olympics is the main goal.
Okay, yeah, well, okay, you could absolutely rip the Olympic time trial. Okay, you're probably the best person I know of to ask this question to then. So if you're, let's say you're going to do the Olympic time trial this year, what's the build up? Let's just say it's fixed and you can do whatever program you want to build up for that. You've already made the selection and they're going to let you do whatever you want for it. What would the next couple months look like in the build up to that?
I will do 3 altitude camps.
Three
and
more?
In between those, like in total 3. So this one and then 2 extra. And in between, I will do some blocks of racing, and that includes like most of the time stage races, because yeah, they are a little bit harder than one day stage races, and like the hardest one day races. So yeah, a combination of not racing too much, but like the hardest racers out there, and then some stage races, and then yeah, I like to step back for a little bit, go on training camp again, have some time to reflect, to settle again, and yeah, to start training until like the next goals. So.
Okay. How much, when you're training on the time trial bike, how much of that training is on the trainer versus outside?
I would say 99% is outside.
Okay.
No, yeah, sometimes we use the trainers, but yeah, I do, if it's possible, I would like to go out.
Sure. Do you ever do like motor pacing or anything like that to try to get the higher speeds, to replicate those higher speeds that you hit in the races?
Yeah, especially sometimes when I come out of like altitude camps or something, it's nice to do a session behind the scooter to get back to like real speed, because yeah, it's the pedaling efficiency is like it's different, so it's always nice to do some work on like high speed again. But yeah, most of the times I spend in the mountains to train, so then yeah, in the end it's like for sure not 20 times a year that I'm will be behind the scooter. So
okay, interesting.
I would say like 5 to maximum 10 times that I train behind the scooter.
Okay, cool. Do you know, so you don't do that much training on the time trial bike, like you were saying, like you don't, like you consistently ride it, but it's not, you're not always on the time trial bike.
Yeah. I consistently ride it always, also in the winter. But yeah, of course I do some efforts, but it's always going towards goals and not like every single week.
Okay. Huh. And then how many times, okay, this is a question that this surprises me a lot. You see the men and the women are doing aero testing so often. How often do you do aero testing? Like, are you still finding, or first answer that question, I guess.
Yeah, actually we just do aero testing in the winter, so not really in the season. The team is testing things like the suits or something. They will always like keep testing those things in the summer, but yeah, in Visma we always try to do all the tests where riders are involved as much as possible in the winter. So that means that this winter I've been one day in the wind tunnel, and that's basically it. So then we try to test all the aspects we want to test. So the preparation towards the test is quite, yeah, process for the staff. And then, so actually in the end, like I just need to be there for one day. And then we try to like get all the things done that we want to test. So.
Okay. And then do you have a custom skin suit? This is another one I don't understand. It's like people talk so much about how different skin suits make a difference, and I can never understand this.
Yeah. Yes and no. Like within our team, we all have the same skin suit, but our clothing sponsor is always like personalizing it. So it's not like a special like suit made for me, but like it's a suit and they like, how do you say it, adjusted it like so that it's everything like exactly like
It's just tailored. It just like it just fits right. It's normal like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, but the sizing is like it's just basically for everyone the same.
Okay. But if I picked up your skin suit, I wouldn't be able to tell that it's any different from one I could order on, like a nice one I could order online. Okay, cool. And do you have the custom Nimble shoes? Do you have like the fully custom shoes? How are those? That's cool.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Are they better than like normal road shoes?
I think better, like they are different. It's really difficult to compare it because the custom shoes you cannot wear it for 4 hours and the normal shoes you can wear them for 4 hours, you know? But the sole is basically the same because the Nimble shoes, the normal ones are just also carbon, so it's like just really stiff. So you need to like it actually, but yeah, I really do. And then the custom shoe, it's an exact, like basically an exact print of your feet. So it's, it's just, it's really nice, but it's also like super hard on your feet, and it can be a bit painful as well.
Okay, so you can't. Is that why people don't wear them in road racing? Like it would just kill your feet after 4 or 5 hours?
After 1 hour.
Yeah. Okay. After 1 hour. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you have any other hobbies other than cycling?
I just really like to be home, like outside in the nature with my family. I have a dog at home, so I always like to, walk around with him, you know, and play. And we live on a small river, so like water sports kind of thing is also always really nice to do in the summer. We all come together with whole neighborhood at the river, and then we just hang around with each other and stuff. So just being home and catching up with family it's one of my favorite things to do. And then with friends, I like to go out for dinner. And like I said, I really like reading, so that's like one of the basically the most of the time that I'm on training camps I will spend on reading besides cycling.
Okay, but what are some of your favorite books? And,
at the moment I'm really into Colleen Hoover, so definitely like the easy kind of reading stuff. But if I go on a training camp, I will always bring like one learning book and one like book for pleasure, you know. So
okay, what are some of your favorite learning books?
Like one of I really liked I got from the team is Legacy.
Okay,
did you read it?
No, I don't know that one.
Okay, so it's about the rugby team in New Zealand and how they built the culture. They came from like quite far and they started to build the whole culture, and then in the end like started to become better and better because we as in Team Visma, they really believe like the strong culture makes in the end like the results. So I really like it that they gave a book to everyone, so when you come to the team, like you will get it and then you can read it, and then you also understand more like what's the philosophy of the team.
Interesting. That's a cool idea. So everybody on the team has gotten the book, or like most of them have read it.
Yeah, everyone. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right. Going back to like the hobbies thing. Like, if I gave you 10,000 euros and you have to spend it on a toy, you can't be responsible with it. What would you spend it on?
Good question. I really like it to race cars.
Race cars.
Yeah.
You like cars? What's your dream car? We can talk about cars then. Forget 10,000 euros. Unlimited budget. Tell me about cars.
A dream car, definitely like a Lamborghini.
A Lamborghini, which one?
Doesn't matter, like that's like so out of
no, come on, dream big.
It doesn't matter.
Olympic but gold medal Lamborghini. You're gonna have the gold medal swinging from the rear license plate. You're gonna have a custom license plate that says gold.
I really like it to race cars. I mean, my mom is actually working her whole life in a company of a car company, And that's how I grew up, in between cars. And I also work sometimes, like, on events on the Formule 1 circuit in the Netherlands, in Zandvoort, where they were racing with Porsche and Ferrari and Lamborghini. And then I was in between all those cars and stuff. I was, like, super impressed as a young kid, you know. And, I just really like the speed and I just like it to drive in general. Like, if they ask someone in the team if someone needs to drive for a little part, and it's always they always look to me, and I really love it. So I also like it more actually to travel sometimes by car than by airplane. But I just like it to have like the speed and the control and just playing around a little bit, you know.
That's awesome. I love that. My dream car is a Lamborghini Aventador SV Roadster. That's like the one that I've always dreamed about since I was a kid. Like, that's the 15-year-old kid in me that wants that. But it's so cool.
Nice.
And then, okay, I was just having this conversation a few days ago with some of my friends, and they were saying like their dream life, like, or like something that they like their rich life, what they want when they have a lot of money is whenever they get on a plane, they want to be able to fly business class. And I was saying, it's like, you know what?
Yeah.
It actually doesn't bother me that much to fly coach. Like, it's like, okay, business class is nicer. I can handle flying coach. My rich life is I want to be able to drive as fast as I want on the Autobahn, which means I want a really fast car, and I want to have screw you money for speeding tickets and enough money for the gas. It's like, I want to drive as fast as I want. That's my rich life.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I love that, though. Car is cool. Okay, so what if 10K for a toy, you'd spend it on like a track day?
Yeah.
At the Nürburgring or something.
I would love to.
Cool.
Yeah, I would love to.
Do you have a motorcycle?
No.
I saw a photo of you on a motorcycle. Have you ridden a motorcycle?
It's a scooter.
That does not look like a scooter. That looks like a...
I know.
I was trying to figure out what bike is this. I was like, this. I really know my motorcycles, and I had no idea what this is.
That's the idea, that it looks like a motorcycle. Yeah, that's a couple of years ago, though. It's still in our garage.
Okay.
But it's a scooter, and it's just like... My husband... made it like he's also really fan of cars, same like me actually, so we are also sometimes driving next to each other, you know, like battling there a little bit. But he built his own scooter, and he like when he was I think 16, and then he wanted to have it look like it was like a motorcycle, and now it actually does look like it is most motorcycle. So yeah,
that's awesome. It's still high five to him from me. That's awesome. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. How about this one then? Who's the hardest worker or like the craziest person you've ever seen when it comes to training?
I would say actually my husband, he's like, I'm always really impressed with him because he has his own company, and they are working there with 10 people, 12, I would say. Like, no one is full-time there, but I think it's quite difficult to run your own company. And then besides, he's still like level pro, so he's training like sometimes over 20 hours a week. I was there like for the past 12 years on his side, and I saw like how he was racing. He also tried to make it as a pro rider. He had some really good results, like he was second behind Roglic in the Tour of Azerbaijan and stuff. And meanwhile, he was running his own business, and for me, that's like quite impressive. And it takes a lot of focus to like go after a day of work to still go on the bike out there, you know, with lights on, and same like you did basically, but you're just trying to keep basically like everything going well on a high level. And I think it's really challenging, and I'm always super impressed how he's doing it. And sometimes I really hate it because he's working 7 days a week, also on like Sundays when it's like 10 o'clock he's still on his laptop or something. But I'm really impressed with how he's doing.
That's amazing. What's his business?
He's running a sock company. It's called Sokloon, and he's selling cycling socks.
Okay, well, here, plug it. What's the name of the site? What's the name of the sock company?
It's called Sokloon. So his last name is Okloon, and then the company is called Sokloon.
How do you spell that?
Sok?
Yeah.
Aloon.
Aloon?
O-A-N, yeah.
O-A-N. Okay, cool. That's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Jasper.
Well, shout out to Jasper. I was gonna, like, when I asked you that question, I was expecting Annemiek van Vleuten. So, like, well, good job, Jasper. You beat
That's
her.
she's definitely extreme too, and I'm always looked up to her. I know her also quite long now, but yeah, I mean, I'm also working together a lot with Marianne, and I think like she's amazing as well, you know, as a rider. But yeah, I really I think it's really impressive if you're a pro athlete, but I think it's even more impressive if you're like a pro athlete or just under like pro level, and then you're trying to combine it with working. Because yeah, for me, like my day exists out of cycling and trying to recover as well as possible, and then like some people combine it with work as well, you know. I think that's way harder.
That's, yeah, I completely agree. It's incredibly impressive. But that's a very cool answer. Good job, Jasper. Who is like, so yeah, you've had some really good mentors close to you. Like, who is the most influential mentor you've had in your cycling career?
Yeah, I think I worked for 8 years together now with Marianne, and I definitely learned the most with her, like from her, because yeah, I've been there in so many races and so many like highs, but also so many lows. Yeah, that you can always learn something, you know. So yeah, it's easy to say for me that it's definitely her, because I spend so much time together, and yeah.
Okay. Is there anything like specific or like the most important thing you've learned from her?
Well, she's actually like, yeah, the funny thing is now if we are racing together, I just actually don't need to talk to her when we come in into the final, like, because I can actually guess what she's thinking or something. Like, we know each other so well. So that makes it really, yeah, easy for us to work together. But she's such a calm person, and yeah, she's always trying to make it to relevate again, and if it's not going so well, then she's always trying to stay calm and positive. And yeah, it's just nice to hear from one of the best riders in the world, like, okay, like don't stress out, like you did something so strong, and like, or in one or two races you will be there again. And yeah, that she's giving you trust and advice on the right moments. And yeah, that just like, she's definitely someone to look up to, you know. So if she's trying to calm you down or give you advice, then you will listen for sure.
Yeah, interesting. I think she, so I've never actually spoken to her, but we stayed at this, like my first world championships as a junior, she was there, and it was like, so that would have been 2013 when she was winning everything. It's like world champion in like five different disciplines and whatnot. But wow, cool.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah, she's unbelievably talented. Like between her and Annemiek is like, wow,
Yeah.
there's nothing left to win.
No, definitely. Yeah, it's super impressive.
Crazy. Okay, last question. What advice would you give for like young girls that are trying to become a pro cyclist?
I think the main thing is just to keep having fun, and to, I really see now the difference that it's like already quite serious at a young age, or like food is super important, or you know, like expectations, or like the focus is like so different than when I started riding. And I think like in the end, if you want to do it for like 10 or 15 years, like fun needs to be like the most important thing. And yeah, I think if you can find that in like what you're doing, so maybe for you it's like challenging yourself to become better in like kind of effort, or you know, like if you can find small things where you can yourself motivated and have nice people around you who will keep you going, then I think yeah, you can actually keep doing the job for 10 to 15 years, and in the end you will then make it to the top, you know, because some riders will be there like on a very young age, like the big talent. But also like myself, like I started to become better on a bit later age, you know. And yeah, then it's just basically about like keep going and like keep having fun in what you're doing, and then you will end up there.
Interesting. Because that's such a hard one, right? Because everybody says, like, yeah, you need to have fun, but it's also you have to be so crazy focused because the sport is so hard. You have to work so hard. You have to think about everything. It consumes your whole life. It's like when you're not training, you're focused on like recovering, getting better for your next training session. So it's like, how do you have fun? And you have to be like one of these freaks that enjoy that part of it. But interesting. Yeah, I like just trying to think of what things make it fun.
I for some, like, it's like going for a lot of mountain bike rides in the winter, you know, or for some it's like training a lot with friends, or I don't know, like you have to find your own way, like how you can make it like nice for yourself. But I really enjoyed my first years in the team with Parkhotel Valkenburg, which is now named as Fokker Schwessels, because like we were just a bunch of friends who were having fun, and in the end, like that made such a strong base, and I still have contact with most of those girls, and I think that made me exciting to go to every single training or like every single race, and now I'm still enjoying riding, and I've again a really nice bunch of people around me who make like being here on altitudes, for example, fun. So that's the most important thing in the end.